Okay, we're starting here on the two dots on the bottom of Lamed Chet Amud Bet. Ukivashin Shedarkan Latei B'tochan Yayin. So things that are pickled, where they also put wine into the brine of the pickling. So those are also Asur B'Achila, but Mutar B'Hana'a. Amar Chizkiya Loshonu El Shedarkan Aval B'Yadua Asur Afilu B'Hana'a. The Mishnah says B'Darkan, when it's the normal procedure, the normal way to go about doing this. But that means that if you actually know that there is wine in here, then it's even asur b'hana'a. So it's only when it's darkan, and here the Rishonim have different definitions of what the darkan versus yadua is. When is it yadua? Is that when the robe of people do it? Is that when everybody in this neighborhood does it? Or is that literally you must know that it's in there? That's b'yadua. So all those different definitions. And then darkan would be some lower standard than whatever you think yadua is. Umayishna mimorius. Why is that different than Morius? Desharu banan b'hana'a. When it comes to Morius, we know that there's wine placed in the Morius. You remember from before, the Gemara discussed that there are three flushings of the Morius. The first two times, the fat of the fish is sufficient to flavor the Morius. On the third time, they need the wine in there to draw out the shamnunit and to flavor it. So by the time you get to the third Morius, we know for sure that there's wine in there. Despite that, in the first Mishnah of the Perek on Chavtet, there, Rabbi Meir said it was Asur Banah, but the Rabbanon only said it was Asur Ba'achila. So why is Yadua over there only gets you to Isur Achila? And yet, according to Chizkiya, Yadua over here by the Kvashim gets you to Isur Anah. So Gemara answers, Hatam La Burei Zuma. The reason that it's put in there is to take away the bad flavor, the bad taste. Hacha Limtuke Taima. Over here, it's actually to give flavor to it. In one instance, it is just an addition, not for flavor at all, but just to remove some bad flavors or to draw out the fats from the fish. But in that way, it's not integral to the flavor or taste of the item, but it is just functional in the fact that it's needed there. And so, in that case, Rashi says, "Avikamanda azul ibud." It's as if it's going to waste or it's going to nothing. Because the only reason the wine's put in there is to remove something that is bad, not to add something that is positive or add flavor to it. On the other hand, by the kvashim, there it is, limtuke taima. It's part of the brine. And the brine is what flavors the vegetables that are inside the brine. And therefore there it's not used to remove bad flavor, it's actually there to give flavor. So their utility in each of these items is different. When its utility is positive and be flavorful, then if we know it's there for sure, we're going to be osir bana. In the case where it's simply a removal of something that is negative, then in that case, even if we know about it, we're not going to make it osir bana, only osir b'achida. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Amar, afilu biyadua nami mutar. Even if you know for certain there's wine in there, it is still mutar, meaning that you can get hana from it. You can't eat it, but you could get hana from it. Maishna mimorius lirabi meir. So then how is this different than Morius for Rabbi Meir, Dasir Bahana'a? The question here is not from the sheet of the Rabbana, but the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Why would you differentiate between Morius, where Rabbi Meir says it's Asur Bahana'a, the Yadua, and now over here, by Kvashim, you're telling me that even if it's Yadua, there is no Isra Ana, there's only Isra Achila. Hatam Yediya Mamasho, Hacha Lo Yediya Mamashan. The difference is that when it comes to the Morius, there you know about the wine. Now, there are alternate girsas here in the Gemarot. That girsa was that hatam yediya umukar. Not only was it known, but it's visible or you can see it. And that means that in the Morius, the wine both gives flavor and color. And so it's obvious that the wine's there. By the kvashin, it's lo yediya. It's not there. You can't tell the flavor. And also, you can't see it. The wine's not so visible in the brine. That's why some Rishonim read it. But the girsa that we have in front of us, which is Rashi's girsa, Rashi explains that Yediya Mamasho is that when it comes to the Morius, you're actually consuming the wine that is in it. One of the ingredients of the Morius is the wine. And when you dip something into the Morius and you use it as a dressing of some sort, then you're going to eat the wine that is in there. And because it's an integral part of the Morius, therefore it's going to be not only Asur Ba'achila, Asur Ba'ana'a. On the other hand, by the pickling, the wine is in the pickling juices, but it's not in the yerek itself. It's not in the vegetables themselves. Now, the truth is that the pickling juices are flavoring the vegetables, so that's why you have them in the brine. I mean, aside from the storage issue, but it does flavor the yerek. But nevertheless, it's not be'en. It's not something that is actually there physically in the vegetables. It's just the flavor that's imparted, but the rest is in the brine. And for that reason, Rashi says, she'en ochlei marotev ela yerek. You don't drink the brine or eat the brine, you eat the vegetable. V'lo yichniso ayarek letocho ela leid kayim. And the only reason you put it in the brine was to store it, to give it shelf life. Today we talk about pickles because you don't have to pickle, we have refrigeration. But pickling in their day was a way to preserve items and give it shelf life. So yes, the wine was in there, it does give some flavor to it, but that's not the primary purpose. The primary purpose is storage and be able to keep it stored for long periods of time. And then again, it does impart some flavor because of the brine, but you're not eating the brine, you're eating the vegetable. For that reason, it would only be a sorba achila, not a sorba ana. So nobody's suggesting that you could eat it. It's just a question if there's also an additional isur ana on top of this. And for the yarak, for the vegetable itself, we're going to say no. So that's the distinction that Rabbi Yochanan makes between Rabbi Meir's position by Murius and over here by the case of the kvashim of the pickling juices. Alright, so then we have the next series of items that are in the Mishnah after kvashim, which are tarit trufa, which was the mixed up fish hash, bitzir sheinba daga kilvit shotetet bo, and then we had brine that doesn't have this little fish or little item that's swimming around in it, vachilik, which is unknown what that is, that's what the Gemara wants to know now, bikoret shel chitit, which we're going to do in the next section of the Gemara, which was the little piece of the chiltit. So here the Gemara asks, my chilik, what is this chilik that is problematic? Amrav Nachum Rav Amrav Zo Sultanit. These are Sultanit, which is a species of anchovies. So something along those lines. Known exactly what it is. Mivnei Ma Asura. What's the problem with this fish? It has fins. It has scales. What's the issue? Mivnei Shervona Ola Ima. Because it doesn't come alone. When the nets are pulled in and where the fishermen capture these fish, there are a lot of fish that are very similar to it, that are non-kosher that end up in the net or end up in the capture mechanism that you put out there. So since you can't distinguish between the sultanit and the non-kosher fish that are there, we don't want you eating the sultanit so that you don't mix it up with the other fish. Now, the obvious answer to that should be fins and scales. Just look and check, you'll know what it is. So that's the next part of the Gemara, which is Tanabanan. Ein lo achshav, batid legadel achar zman. If a young fish does not have fins and scales, but in its full maturity or state of full maturity does have fins and scales. Kagom. Example of that is hasultanit. So one of the examples are these species of anchovies. That means when you capture it when it's young, it does not have fins and scales. That's exactly the problem. Now you're identifying a fish not by its fins and scales, but by the shape or the nature of the fish, knowing that in the future it'll have fins and scales. But if coming up in those nets are other fish that are very similar to it, then how do you distinguish? And that's the risk. Obviously, experts can distinguish between them, but it's a risky endeavor when you have fish that don't have the simanei tahara on them, because they only grow them later. Va'afitz, which is some form of sardine, harize mutar, that's totally fine. Yesh lo achshav, if he has, the fish has it in their young state, va'atid ashir, b'sha'ash olam min hayam, and then they are going to lose them when you take them out of the water. So as you remove them from the water, they shed their scales or they shed their fins. Kagon. The examples are akunus, which is coleus. Akunus, which I think is some sort of scamper. Ketas paitias. So I translated it as swordfish. So that's, it'd be interesting only because swordfish is not a kosher. Ve'ach patias, which is antheus. And then atunas, which is tunny fish. Obviously, if you want to explain that it's tuna, but most people translate atunas as tunny fish. Mutar. All of these fish are fine. Now, the Baal Tosafot explain what is the source for the fact that these are mutarim. We know that the simanei tara are fins and scales. How is it possible that when they don't have fins and scales, be kosher? The Baal Tosafot say that the pasuk says, ain lo. If it does not have snapir v'kaskeset, then it's not kosher. They darshan ain lo. The ilu, the way that we do it by yivamot. By the yivama, it says there, ein, and we say ayin alav. Check to make sure that there's no offspring. If there's any offspring, then there's no din of yibum. So similarly over here, when it says ein lo, snafir v'kaskeset, he translates that as ayin lo. Check it out. Make sure that there are no fins and scales. And that means that even if they were there prior, or they're going to grow them later, that's okay. Similar to the way it's used by Yivama, which is that if there's any offspring, even if male, female, grandchild, whatever it is, no matter what it is, that will obviate the need for Yibum. So do over here. If you can't find Snapir Bekaskes, it means go check. If they're never Snapir Bekaskes, that's the case. But if you can find them anywhere, then it is kasher. That's one part of the drasha. The next part of the drasha is also the fact that the pasuk says that they have snapir v'kaskeset b'mayim, that they have fins and scales in the water. So the Sifrei says that if you take them out of the water and they lose their fins and scales, that's fine, because they had them b'mayim. They had the fins and scales in the water. So those two drashot give us what we find here in the Braita, that either way, it is kasher. If they grow them later, or if they had them, then both of those make them kasher. Achriz Rabbi Abo Kezari, he announced in Kezari, Kirve Dagim, Ubran Nikachim Mikol Adam. So this is interesting. Kezari, which would have been the Roman capital of the area here, is a major metropolis, trade city, commerce city. You can go today and see all the remains and the reconstruction of what was there at that time. It was a major shipping dock as well, because Herod built a special man-made inlet in order for ships to dock. And so therefore it was a major trading hub. So he's announcing in Kesari that you can buy kirvei dagim, the innards of the fish, v'ubran, and the fish eggs or the roe, the fish, nikachim mikol adam, from any person. That means you don't need a heksher. Heskatam, enan baim elamipusa basfamia. Because the chazaka is that any fish that are found in this area or these areas are coming from one of two places, either Plusa or Aspamia. Aspamia is likely Spain or something along that line, but they're coming out of certain areas of the Mediterranean. And Pelusa seems to be a city that was along the Nile River. And Rashi explains to us over here, Vein Dagim Tmeim Mitzuim Sham. There are no non-kosher fish in those areas. So all the fish that are being brought in are brought in from these areas where there are only kosher fish. And given that, you don't have to check. You don't need a hefsher. All the fish that are here are kosher fish. The tzachanta, which is found in the river of Dabav, that's what Rashi translates it as, and he says that tzachanta is the chilik that we had mentioned above, then sharya, it's mutar, you don't have to worry about it. Here we worried about the chilik being mixed up with other fish. When you fish in this river, you don't have to worry about it. My time, ma'ilim, it was shum derid dife mayo. If you say because there's a fast current in the water, since the non-kosher fish don't have a spine or don't have a strong structure to them, they can't survive in areas where there's a fast current. We see that even in areas where there are fast currents in the rivers, there are non-kosher fish that are living there, so that can't be a proof. These are brackish waters, so it has a salty content to it. It's not sweet water. Since it doesn't have scales, it can't survive in places where the water is salty. That's a nice theory, but we see that non-kosher fish live in this brackish water, in this salty water. The sediment of this river is not conducive to the growth of non-kosher fish. The fish need a certain environment. That's both temperature, type of water, sediment, and food to eat. And these waters are just not conducive to the non-kosher fish. So you can make the assumption that everything that comes out of this river is kosher, because that's the tendency of this river, that it only brings up or only facilitates a conducive environment for kosher fish. Amravina, Vaidna, the Kashavche Beinar Guza, Beinar Gamdo. Now, seems here that they diverted the rivers. It's not uncommon in Bavel that when rivers either ran lower or they wanted to irrigate certain areas or create canals, that they used to redirect rivers. So now, these days, that Nar Guza, Nar Gamdo flow into Bav Nahara, Asire, because they bring with them the other fish from these rivers. And so even though it may not be conducive here in this river for the fish, but they're coming from the waters of the other rivers, and they are conducive to the non-kosher fish, and their waters mix with the waters of the Bav Nahara, so it changes the environment, so that now it's conducive to non-kosher fish, and you can no longer rely on this statement. Amar Abaye, Hai Chamra Diyama. The sea chamor, which some translate as a hake, shari, is mutar. Torah Diyama, the ox of the sea, some species of ray, asir, is problematic. V'simaneich, and the way to remember that is, tamei tahor, tahor tamei. That which is non-kosher on land, the chamor, tahor, is kasher in the water. So the chamor on land is not kasher, but the chamor of the sea is kasher. Tahor, the ox, which is tahor on the land, tamei, is problematic in the water. Now, Rashi points out that this is based on what the Gemara in Chulin says, that everything on land has a comparable animal or species in the water. And that's what the Gemara is speaking about here, that there's a chamor on the land, there's a chamor in the sea, there's an ox on land, there's an ox in the sea. Obviously, it doesn't mean literally, but they have some features that are similar or appearances that are similar that makes them carry the same name, except for one species, the chuldah, does not have that. But then the Tosafot points out that this principle is local. This principle is only for these two fish. It's not a general principle that that which is tamei on the land is tahor in the water, and that which is tahor on the land is tamei in the water. You can't apply that broadly. It's a mnemonic that has a very, very specific meaning in this context, and you can't apply it more broadly. Amar Rav Ashi, Shvar Nuna, which I've seen translated as a hammer fish, Shari, Kadesh Nuna, is an antheus, asir, is problematic. So that would go against what we saw in the Braita above. So the Rach, as the Pilei Tosafot point out, have the exact opposite girsa. Shafar Nuna being asur, and Kadesh Nuna being mutar. And that would then, if it thinks the antheus, then that would correlate with what we saw above, that the antheus was considered to be kasher. Simanech, and your siman to remember this is Kodesh Lashem. That which is Kodesh goes to Hashem. So the Kadesh Nuna, which is asur, is Kodesh Lashem, which would mean that it's off limits. You can't use it. Igadamre Kever Nuna Asur. Some say it is the mudfish that is Asur. Simanech. And the way to remember that is Kivre Ovdei Kochavim. The burial places of the Ovdei Kochavim, which obviously the Ovdei Kochavim are not Israel, and they're off limits, quote unquote. So then it's the Kever of the Ovdei Kochavim, which is Asur. That's also a sword over here. Now, again, if you have the opposite girsa, which the Balei Tosafot note, that the Rach, Garas Ipcha, Shvar Nuna is a sword, and Kedesh Nuna is Shari, the Simanech. The Siman is not from the Pasuk in Shmot, but rather from the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Kodesh Yisrael Lashem. That Israel is considered Kodesh Lashem, which is that these are Mutarim Israel. It's the opposite meaning, not that it's off-limits, but rather that B'nai Yisrael are uniquely associated with Hashem. They have permission to eat this. Komar, Hashem itiru la'amo. Hashem gave permission for his nation to eat these. B'igad amri kever nuna shari. And there's also an opposite girsa with regards to the kever nuna, that it should be mutar. V'simanech, kivrei obdei kochavim einu mitamim bo'el. And the siman is that the kivrei obdei kochavim have a different tuma, according to Rabbi Shimon, where a Tumata mate of a Nachri only has application by Magava Masa, does not have application by oil. So Kivri Ovdei Kochavim, you can walk over them, or Kohen can walk over them without any problem. So that would be the Siman then, that it would be Kasher. So depending on the Girsa here, then the proofs would be of a different nature. Rabbi Akiva Ikla the Ginzak. So Rabbi Akiva went to Ginzak. Now, you have to go back to Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, where the Balei Tosafot bring that Rashi suggested that it can't be Rabbi Akiva, because back on Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, they had three questions for Rabbi Akiva, and he didn't know the answers to any of them. Rashi said that's not possible, that three questions in three different areas of halacha, that Rabbi Akiva would not have the capacity to answer them. Therefore, Rashi changed the girsa there to Mar Ukva. And if he did that there, then you would have to change the girsa here as well to Mar Ukva Ika the Ginzak, because this is a similar story that someone went to Ginzak. Now, did Rabbi Akiva go to Ginzak? That was part of the question over there. We don't find Rabbi Akiva going to Ginzak. So that's why they changed it to Mar Ukva or Rabbi Akavio to someone else besides Rabbi Akiva. So whatever change you made back on Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, you'd make a change over here as well. Aite the kamei haununa, davidami lechipusa. So they brought him a fish that looked similar to the mudfish. Again, that's assuming that the mudfish is asur, based on the gears that we have. Chafya bidikula, he wrapped it up or covered it with a basket. Chazebe kaupe visharya. Then he saw scales on the basket, and he was matirit. So the fish was flopping around, and he put it into a basket, and after the fish was flopping around the basket, you could see the scales were left on the basket itself. So whether this was a new way to test the fish, or it was just a way to make a contrast so that you could see the scales, but in this way, you were able to see that there were scales in the fish, and based on that, he was matir. Again, the Mishnah tells us that the fish has to have fins and scales, but there's also a correlation between the two. And the Mishnah tells you that any fish that has scales also has fins, whereas the other way around, just because you have fins doesn't mean you have scales. So if you know for certain that it has scales, then by definition you also know that it's going to have fins, and that will give away that it is kasher. Vashi ikla letam doraya, aitu lekameh haununa, tabadami letzlofka. So he brought before him a fish that looks similar to an eel. Nakte lahade yoma, he put it out in the sun to dry. Kazadabebe tzimche, he saw that there were scales that were peeling off of it or coming off of it. Bisharya, and he was matirit. Ravashi ikla lahau atra, he went to the city. Ati lakamei nuna, davidame shapar nuna. It was similar to the hammerfish that we saw above. Chafya bim vishikle chivare, with a white basin or utensil. Chazebe kalpe, and obviously the fish had a darker complexion, and therefore putting in the white basin, the scales rubbed off on the item, and then you could see them in the contrast to the white, you could see the black scales. Visharya, and he was matirit. So in all these cases, even though it was not clear that these fish had scales on them when they were taken out of the water, and even to the naked eye, looking at the fish, you just couldn't tell if they had scales. But then they did something in order to discover that there were scales on it. Now, whether you call that technology, that's a possibility, or you just say that it was a technique to create contrast so that you could see the scales, or you can make it clear that the scales were there. So obviously that would have nafkaminot in terms of the implications of this Gemara, which is, does technology, or when you have a new mechanism for doing this, does that change the halacha in these situations? Until now, the people didn't eat the fish because they couldn't find the scales. All of a sudden, they introduced a new technology, and now you can see that there are scales. Does that make the fish kosher now? Or is it just simply it was a technique? Their scales are there. It's just a technique for seeing or being able to recognize the scales. And that is not a change in technology. That's simply a way to give you the access to the ability to highlight the scales that are there. And in that case, it would not have implications. And obviously that has implications today where we have significantly better technology. When you have microscopes and you have magnifying glasses, what does that do in terms of your ability now either to make things kasher or to make them masur? Like many people claim, how come our ancestors ate all these fruits and vegetables and never worried about all the bugs that are inside of them? Well, they couldn't see them. We can see them today. Now, one of the requirements for anything to be asur is it has to be visible to the naked eye. If it's not visible to the naked eye, we don't expect someone under microscopic checking to then make something asur. But many times, if you know what you're looking for, and then you wash it out, they are visible in the water afterwards. And so you can wash them and see these bugs if you know that they're there because you've used a microscope to see them. So now, and that question is, does that change the din of these items? Now that we know, because of technology, does that make it now that these items will have different dinim than they had prior to that? So depending on how you read this Gemara, will obviously have impact on what you think the impact of technology is. Was it here that they were bringing new technology to bear, and therefore they were matir fish that before were not mutar? Or is this simply a way for them to be certain that there were scales there, or again, a way to create visibility, but not a new technology that they were bringing to bear? So that will have nafkaminot in terms of how you read this Gemara. Rabba Baruchana Ikla Akra de Agma, went to the fort of Agma, a place that was in Bovel. Kivule Tzachanta, they brought before him Tzachanta, which was this chilik that we spoke about before. So now they're presenting with something should be in kasher, even though we had a takana not to eat it because it gets mixed up with non-kosher fish. Shemei lahu gavra davikarilei pate. I don't know if he didn't like it. Somehow it was offensive to him. And he was calling this dish that they were giving to Rova bate, which is like a roach, something non-kosher. Amar mitakarilei bate shmamina dover tamei itbe. He says, if he's saying that, then it must be something wrong with it. Not that if the guy doesn't like the fish, then that's obviously an indication there's something wrong with it, but the terminology that he used to indicate that he didn't like the fish was a terminology about something that was tameh. In that, Rabbi Bar Chana saw a siman min hashamayim, that there must be something wrong, they're trying to protect him. So, lo achal minei, he didn't eat from it. The tzafra, ayin bo, in the morning he took a careful look at it, ashkach vei davar tameh. Then he saw there was non-kosher fish or non-kosher items that were mixed in it. Kariyah nafshei said about himself, lo yuneh l'tzadik kol aben, that no bad will befall the tzaddik. And so here too, Hashem looked out for him. At night, especially in their day where lighting was very poor, or there was no lighting at all, they're serving him a dish, there's no way for him to discern what's in the dish. Now it's called tzachanta, which is chilik, which should have been fine, but nevertheless, the other person who made a note of this item, and even if it's just because he didn't like it, but the way that he called it bate, indicated there was something wrong with it, or something that Rova should be aware of, and therefore he desisted from eating it. And in the morning, when he discovered there was something tameh, he said that Hashem looked out for him. And this is a general principle that we have. The Baalei Tosafot note this in a number of places, which is that the Gemara says that tzaddikim are protected from michshol, from tripping up or doing something wrong. But the Baalei Tosafot bring many instances in Shas where we have chachamim, tanaim, amorim making mistakes or doing something wrong. So the Baalei Tosafot say that this is uniquely associated with eating, ingesting items. Because the way the Torah terms ingesting improper items is tuma and tara, that it affects the individual, makes them tameh, makes them tahor, and therefore there's a unique aspect of achila where Hashem protects the tzaddikim from ingesting something that is asur, or ingesting something that is lo mi'usar, tevel, tameh, and this is what Rabbi Bar Chana is speaking about over here, that Hashem looked out for him and protected him from eating something that was tameh. Vakoret shel chiltit. It's in the Mishnah, this is an item that is asur, which isn't clear why it is asur. The translation of it is asufutida, which we're going to see in a second, has certain properties to it, which makes it unique. My taima, mishom de mifsakalei besakino. It's because they cut this vegetable with a knife. Afagav damar mar, even though yesterday we spoke about this in the Gemara later on, in the Masechta is going to spend a lot of time on it, notein tam lifkam mutar, that if the flavor that is imparted is a negative flavor, then it is mutar. Now again, yesterday the Baalei Tosafot Rashi said something similar. Number one, concluded that stam kelim of a non-Jew are considered to be einan b'nei yoman. They're considered to be more than 24 hours between the time that they were last used and currently. And the Baalei Tosafot say that is because it's a sfeika, as we noted yesterday. Sfeika, whether they used them in the last 24 hours or not. Even if they used them in the last 24 hours, there's a possibility they used it for something that has no flavor. Possibility they used it for something that has negative flavor. And so that sfeika makes it that we assume that whenever you're using a pot, utensil of a nachri, you can assume it's an einu b'nei yomo. It is more than 24 hours since it was last used. Of course, if you know differently, then that would change the halacha. But in cases where you don't know, we will make that assumption. And that means, by definition, it's notein tam lifgam, because after 24 hours, the flavor breaks down and it deteriorates to the point where the flavor being added now is negative instead of positive. And the third principle is notein tam lifgam is mutar. When it gives a negative flavor, it's mutar. The Baalei Tosafot, based on our Gemara yesterday, wanted to conclude that that's the halacha. Notein tam lifgam is mutar. So all of these give you dispensations when dealing with utensils of an achri. The truth is that it also has implications for Jewish utensils. When you have basar b'chalav, if you utilize a pot or an item and you have no idea when the last time it was used, we assume that stam kelim are einan b'nei yoman. You would assume that the stam keli does not have a din of b'nei yoman. Again, all of this we're going to get to later in the Masechta, but the Gemara introduces it over here. He's cutting with a knife. If it's einu b'nei yomo, that means that the flavor is negative. So why should that be a problem here for the item? Agav churfei dechiltita machilei shamnunita. Because of the sharpness of the item, this is a dover charif, therefore it affects the knife differently. Ba'avilei benotein tam l'shevach l'asur. And therefore now it gives it a positive flavor, and that will be problematic. So now there are two ways to read what happens over here. The problem is that the knife still has flavors embedded in it. So it has shamnunita, means the fats or the flavors that are in this knife are then imparted to the chiltit. So Rashi reads that as being mematako. that it sweetens it, so that the fats of the knife give flavor that mitigates the harifut of the chiltit. So he sees the problem here being that the fats, which normally are a negative flavor, in this context, they happen to be positive because they mitigate the sharpness of the chiltit. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that the sharpness of the chiltit then enters the knife, and in entering the knife, it then is chozer v'neor. It now helps the fat in the knife to regain a positive flavor, and that positive flavor then is reabsorbed into the chiltit, and then it becomes notein tam l'shevach. So again, you could read it in one of two ways, that it's notein tam l'shevach because the charifut of the chiltit needs an offset to it, or needs a mitigating factor. Or you can read it that the charifut helps the flavor to return to its former state. It reignites it to the point where it's no longer a notein tam l'shevach, it's now notein tam l'shevach, and that shevach, then it re-enters into the chiltit. So since it's notein tam l'shevach, it's asur. The Bali Tosfot has over here, ve'im tomar, why don't you just say, sagile b'klipa, that when you have a non-kosher item, that is, because of whatever the absorption is, then we have what's called a klipa, a skin's worth, or an outer edge worth. I mean, there's absorption, but the absorption only goes to a certain depth of the item. Given that fact, then we should only have to cut off the edges of the chiltit, and you should be able to eat the remainder of the chiltit. Why can't you just remove a klipa's worth, a skin's worth of the area which came into contact with the knife, and everything should be okay? And he brings examples of that from Chulin. He says, V'yesh lomar, the chorfei de chiltit balot fei. That happens to be a makloket rishonim, which has major impact. Alocha, we're machmir for both studim in this, but that is when you have a dover charif, how far or how deep is the absorption? So the Bali Tosfot over here say, well, given the fact that it's a dover charif, it increases the absorption level. Not only that you get at a skin's worth, but it penetrates deeper into the item. And that means now it's going to spread within the chiltit, and you can't just take off a klipa. But then the Bali Tosfot would say, well, if that's the case, then that would be the same din by any other dover charif. V'yesh parshim, cocaine, the patsal v'kafalot. The same thing, the nechtak v'sakin shov de kochavim, the lo sagile v'klipa. That would mean that the impact is on any dover charif. You're talking about onions, garlic, all the other things that are deemed to be dover charif, then you should have the same problem. And being meisir a klipa would not be sufficient in all of those instances. But then you have, shamati b'shem Aram, the shem of the Rabbeinu Moshe, the chiltita davka, the charif tvei, the lo batzal v'kaklot. That chiltit is unique in the fact that it's super charif. It says it's super charif, it has bigger absorption or a larger area of absorption, but that would not be true by batzal, that would not be true by kaflot and other items that are considered to be dabar charif. So obviously it has major nafkamina d'alocha, because many of the issues that come up in kashrut have to do with dabar charif. That's usually the problem. Because if you say that stam kelim are ain't a b'nei yoman, and generally the items that we're using are clean, then the major issue really comes in with dabar charif, because that reignites the flavor. Now, how deep is that penetration of that flavor? That is actually the napkamino over here. Is it just a klipa's worth? Is it deeper than a klipa's worth? And what items have that impact? Here, the Bali Tosafot, first of all, bringing you the fact that Dover Harif has deeper penetration, but then he's not sure whether that's unique to the chiltit, or that's something that applies to all Dover Harif. And again, we have different views within the Rishonim, and we are generally machmir for all views within the Rishonim. And that means when it's a chumrah, we'll assume that it penetrates deeply. And when it's a chumrah the other way, and we'll say it's only a kadei klipa, then we'll go that direction. So we'll be machmir for both tzadim when it comes to these issues. The Gemara continues and says, Avdei de Rabbi Levi, habaka mezavin chiltita. So the servant, really the Eved Kenani of Rabbi Levi, was selling chiltit, which is this, dover charif. Kinach nashe de Rabbi Levi, after Rabbi Levi passed away, atu lekamei Rabbi Yochanan, amulei maul demizban minei. Can we continue to purchase from him now that Rabbi Levi is no longer there? Rabbi Levi was, in a sense, the mashkiach because he was a part of his household. So if the servant of Rabbi Levi is selling something, we look at him as an extension of Rabbi Levi, and we would assume that it's kasher, he's ne'aman. On the other hand, now that Rabbi Levi passed away, what happens to the status of his servant? Amalu, abdo shochaver, harihu kechaver. The slave, the servant of the chaver, has the same status as the chaver himself. So here it seems to be that not only is he a chaver during the lifetime of Levi, but even after he passed away, that he retains the status of a chaver. Rav Huna bar Nyume, Zama Tchilta mi Anshei Beitei de Rav Amram, Chasida. Rav Huna bar Nyume used to purchase Tchilet from the household of Rav Amram Chasida. Ata the Kameh de Rav Yosef, he came to ask Rav Yosef if that was okay, lo hava biyode. He didn't have the answer to the question. Now if you look in Rabbeinu Chananel translates Anshei Beitei, which is the way that many of the Rishonim translated in Menachot. In Menachot it's speaking about that he used to put Tchilet into the begadim of his household, and Rashi over there translates Anshei Beitei as being Ishto, his wife. And over there it's a machloket as to whether tzitzit is a zman grama or not, so whether women are chayavot in tzitzit, or whether it's a chovat mano or chovat gavra, it's a sugya we'll get to in Menachot. But over here too, the Rabbeinu Chananel translates Anshei Beitei as his wife. So they were buying it from the widow of Rav Amram Chasido. So Rav Huna bar Nyume was supporting her and buying it from her, but then he wanted to know if that was good. Her ashkacha, was that okay? So he came to Rav Yosef and he said he didn't have the answer. Paga bei Chanan Chaito, he bumped into Chanan the tailor. Amale Yosef Anya Aminale. Yosef, the poor one, where would he know it from? So that's interesting, the comment that he's making by Rav Yosef. Almost a denigrating type of comment. How is the poor Yosef going to know about it? Although some chalk that up to the fact that Rav Yosef got very ill and forgot all of his learning and then had to learn it again. So here, what he's saying is, how is Rav Yosef going to have this information when it's not widely available and it's an experiential thing? It's something that you ask when you have an experience like this. And Rav Yosef, who had forgotten his Talmud, there's no way that he's going to have the answer to this question for you. He says, nevertheless, Chanan Chaita says, I had an incident like this. That I purchased Chelet from the household of Rabbana, who was the brother of Rav Chiya bar Abba. And again, the Rabbeinu Chananel translates Anshei Beitei over here, his wife, Ishto. I went to check with Rav Matna below Abba Biyote. He didn't know it. And here from the story, you'll see maybe why Chanan Chaita thought that there was no way Rav Yosef's going to know it. Atai the kameder of Yehuda mehagronaya. Then I brought the question before Rav Yehuda from Agronaya. Amarli nafalta liyad. Now you're in my possession, or you need me now to explain it to you. The fact that Rav Yehuda and Agronaya answered it in that way seems to indicate that it was not a widely known piece of information, and that's why he might have said about Rav Yosef, "There's just no way Rav Yosef's going to know this because I have the information and I know it was hard to come by." And Rav Yehuda ben Agronaya, when I told him the question, he says, you need me because I'm the only one who has the answer to this question. So that could be the reason, or it could be that Chanan Chaita had a love-hate relationship with the Chachamim, and even though he seems to be halakhically inclined, it's that he wasn't so respectful of the Chachamim, and that's why Rav Yehuda ben Agronaya says to him, now you need me, now you're going to have to act appropriately, and that might explain why he wasn't so appropriate when it came to Rav Yosef. Again, different ways to read it. Hachi Amar Shmuel, this is what Shmuel says, Eshet Chaver, Harihi Kechaver. The wife of a Chaver has the same status of the Chaver, and obviously the implications of that, even after the person passes away, that that would be the case, that Eshet Chaver, Harihi Kechaver, and we discussed this in Shvuel, as to the halakhot that derive from this, that Eshet Chaver, Kechaver, and there we discussed the tshuva of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, about their giving respect or courtesy to a wife of a Chaver, a wife of a Talmud Chacham. Getting on the bus, was it okay to let the wife of the Talmid Chacham go first? Because she was Eshet Talmid Chacham, Eshet Chaver, Kechaver. Is there a problem with Tzniut, or with Pritzut of Tzniut to allow her to go first? So that's the discussion over there. And here we have this principle, once again, mentioned that Eshet Chaver, Kechaver. The Tan Rabbanan, we have a Braita. The alternate girsa over here was Tanina Lahad, the Tan Rabbanan. What we're seeing over here from the Amoraim is actually found in a Tanaic work, which is, Eshet Chaver, Harehi Chaver, that when it comes to the wife of the Chaver, she has the same status as the Chaver. Avdol Shel Chaver, Harehu Kechaver. And similarly, the slave, the Eben Kenani, of the Chaver has the same status as the Chaver. Chaver Shemait, the Chaver that passes away, Ishto Banav, Ubnei Beito, Harehim Bechez Katan, Ad Sheyachshadu. Then the household, the widow and the household have the same status as being Chaverim, until we cast aspersions on their believability. If something happens that indicates otherwise, but absent that, we will assume that they continue the practices of the household and they are chaverim. B'chein, chatzer shemokhrim va tchelet, an area or commercial area store where they sell tchelet, harei hein b'chez katan, that store has the same chazaka Ashtipasel, until you lose that status or that ashkacha. Now here, there's no real ashkacha. They have a nemanut that they're selling tchelet. It was a major problem in their day because tchelet was extremely expensive. And it was a very good lookalike that could serve the same purposes. And it was very hard to determine whether you had the fake or the real one. And that is tchelet, which comes from these snails and from the sea, which was hard to produce, very expensive. It was also outlawed by the Romans in Israel, which made it even more expensive. And then in the alternative was what's called kaleilan or indigo. So indigo, which comes from a plant, that was a very good copy of the tchelet, and most people, to the untrained eye, could not tell the difference between them. And truthfully, even the trained eye couldn't tell the difference. The Gemara will give us a test when we get to discussing tchelet, that there was this type of cleansing process, which the dye of the kaleilan would not stand up to, the indigo would not survive this process. But tchelet, when the dye took, it was much stronger, it stayed in the baguette, then if you tested it with this wash or this liquid, it would not come off. So there was a test for it, but it was very hard to come by. And therefore, people needed to know that these people were trustworthy with selling tchelet. There's a huge incentive to sell knockoffs because the price is so high and the cheap cost of the knockoffs is nothing. And people can't tell the difference, so people were doing that all the time. So if you have a area or a storefront or a chatzer where they sell tchelet, you can rely that it's tchelet until things change or there's indication that things have changed. Tarabanan, they have a braita in the Tosefta. Eshet Am Haaretz, Shenisei Techaver. You have a wife of an Am Haaretz, the widow of the Am Haaretz, now that marries a Chaver. Chen Bito Shel Am Haaretz, the daughter of an Am Haaretz, Shenisei Techaver, that marries into the Chaverim. Chen Abdo Shel Am Haaretz, or a slave, an Eved Pnani, that belonged to an Am Haaretz, Shenimkar Lechaver, and then sold to Chaver. Kulan Tzrichim Lekabel Divrei Chaverut. They have to explicitly have an acceptance that they are abiding by the principles of Chaverut, which Rashi over here lists as some of the matters that you need to accept are Sheyochlu B'Tara, that they eat Kulin Al Tarata Kodesh, and Sheyasru Aperot, and they take off Trumot and the Masrot, Ukayotzeben, other matters that were Chaverim were very makpid on, that they kept these halachic items that affected other people as well as themselves, and they were very careful about them. Aval, Eshet Chaver, Shenisei Am Haaretz, the widow of the Chaver then remarries to an Am Haaretz. V'chein Bito Shel Chaver, Shenisei Am Haaretz, the daughter of a Chaver who now marries an Am Haaretz. V'chein Abdo Shel Chaver, or an Eved of the Chaver that is Nimkar Am Haaretz, is sold to an Am Haaretz. Einat Tzrichim Lekabel Divrei Chaverut Lechatchila. They do not need to accept it. We assume that they persist in the practices that they've kept until now, and they will be assumed to be chaverim even in their new context. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Yehuda Omer, afein tzrichim lekabel divrei chaverut lechatchila. Those individuals as well have to now accept divrei chaverut. V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer. So Rabbi Shimon Elazar brings a famous story, which is Maisa v'isha achat, shenisei techaver. So a woman who was married to a chaver, v'ayta kosheret lo tefillin hayado. And as a partner to the chaver, she used to help him put on his tefillin, tie his tefillin on his arm. Nisei temoches. After that husband passed away, or if she got divorced, I'm not sure what the situation was, she married a tax collector, and as Rashi says over here, the moches is stam gazlan. The assumption is that the mochesim in those days were thieves. V'ayta kosheret lo kishrei moches al yado. And in place of tying on the tefillin to the arm, she was now tying on the receipts, the tax receipts, onto his arm. In essence, the woman followed the lead of the man of the house. And whatever the man of the house was doing, she was a partner to that, and she was an assistant in whatever that was. So when she is with the chacham or the chaver, she acts like a wife of a chaver and wife of a chacham, which is the wife of a moches. She acts like the wife of a moches. And so therefore she adjusts or attunes to the environment that she's in, and that would then dictate that her status is dependent on where she lives or amongst whom she lives. So in that way, you have now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a necessity that when they enter this new environment, that they have to reaccept their divrei chaverut. We don't just assume that whatever they did before would continue afterwards. In terms of the believability of a person after the individual passes away, we see over here that there's two individuals. One is the eshet chaver ha'ike chaver, the wife of the chaver, and we also saw that the eved of the chaver consistently does that afterwards. There are Rishonim that have a slightly different girsa, it seems, by Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi, in our girsa, had an eved. It was an eved that was doing it, there is an opening girsa that does not have the word Eved in it, and then some of the Rishonim make a distinction between Eved and Isha. And that is by Isha, the woman who is the widow of the Chaver, she continues the practices of the household, first of all, because they learned from the husband, and they were trained under the husband's auspices, and so therefore they continue those practices, because even when they were practicing them, it was something that came a part and parcel of who they are. And Eved, on the other hand, is simply a taker of instructions or taker of orders. And when he's ordered to do this, he does this. That doesn't mean that he's inculcating whatever it is, and therefore he's changing his status. He simply just carries out whatever the Baal Bayit asks. And that means once the Baal Bayit is gone, then you would have questions as to his believability. Both because of an Eved, as the Mishnah Navot says, is also chashud, b'gzeilah, chashud, doing the wrong thing. And in addition to that, he was in a position or a mentality of just taking orders, not forming a persona or forming a certain lifestyle based on that. And therefore, once the master is gone, the Eved is not Naaman. So that would be a way to distinguish between them, but our Gemara would not allow for that distinction because our Gemara says it was Eved of Rabbi Levi. And there the Gemara said, Eved Chaver Kechaver means or was indicating that he did have a status of Chaver even after the passing of his master. And that's why there are those that indicate there must have been an alternate girsa based on those Rishonim that make such a distinction. Right now, Gemara jumps tracks onto something that's connected to our Gemara, but really it's something that we're going to get to later in the Masechta, which is Hashkacha. What type of Hashkacha do you need on items? Amar Rav, Chavit, Asur, Bechotam Achad. These four items, a single seal is not sufficient. Champag, Mutar, Bechotam Achad. These four items are fine, or a Hashkacha on them with a single seal is sufficient. And now the Gemara explain what these items are. The Chavit that we said is Chalav, Basar, Yayin, and Tchelet. All four of these items, a single seal is not sufficient. The way Rashi distinguishes between them is that there is a risk-reward trade-off here for the individual. You need two things to compel an individual to cheat in these matters. One is that there has to be an economic incentive. There has to be monetary gain for him to do it. That's one. And number two is, there's a tircha aspect. How much trouble is he going to go through in order to do it? So the higher the economic reward, the more likely he is to make this exchange or do something to cheat that would make it that we don't trust him with a single seal. That's what all these items over here, by Chalav, Basar, Yayin, and Tchelet, these are all expensive items that have much cheaper replacements, and therefore he's very incentivized economically to cheat. That means that a Chotam Achad, a single seal, is not going to be enough. Either the way Rashi explained it earlier in the Masechta, that's not enough tircha. It's a little tircha, so he'll do it. If you already put two seals on it, that's just too much tircha for him to go through, and that will be a disincentive. According to other Rishonim, the single seal is just about tircha, but the second seal has to be a personalized seal, where it's hard for them to replicate or copy, and that's why they're not going to do it. So the second seal adds an additional level of encryption by which the person is not going to be able to replicate it, and that's why it's better. Rashi is focused on tircha all the time. Other Rishonim focus on the security or the personal nature of the seal. And again, we discussed that before with regards to the wine barrels and the seals on top. We discussed all the different views in the Rishonim with regards to this. But here you have Chalav, Basar, Yayin, and Tchelet. Ar Asurim, B'choltam Achad, cannot be used with a single seal. Chiltit, Morius, Pat, Gvina, Mutarim, B'choltam Achad. When you're dealing with these items, Chiltit, which is just a Dover Harif, and that's the problem over here, it's not necessarily an expensive item. Morius, fish brine, which was commonplace. Pot, bread, there's no advantage, we'll see in a second, of exchanging out the bread, and gvina, and cheeses, all of those are mutarim b'choltam achad. A single seal over there will suffice in all of these cases. All right, so now, if you look back at the Baal Tosafot at the bottom of the previous Amud, Perish Rashi, the fish, and the Mayim Yikarim. As we noted, Rashi says the major issue over here is the economic value of these items and the incentive to cheat in these areas. Rabbeinu Ephraim Bar David Ayomer Atam Mishum De'ite Li'isura Be'enei. That in all the first cases, the Isur is present. Meaning that it's an item by which, if it got swapped out, or there's a problem, the Isur would be real Isur. It'd be Basar Tamei. It'd be Basar Nakasher. It'd be Stam Yenam or Yayin Nesech. You'd have real issues here. All the other items are what we call, in a sense, Tarovet. They would be mixtures of the item, not the item itself. It says, Ve'ein Nira, the Rabbi Yehuda, and then the Baal Tosafot go on about this, that say that that doesn't seem so true. Kach Nira Lo, Yoter Tam Rashi, Perish Mishum Yoker, that has to do with the value. Because the Gemara early on said that when the morius and the wine prices are differentiated, then we don't worry about cheating. If the morius is worth less than the wine, nobody would put wine in the morius in order to fake people out. They'd be losing money every time they put wine into the morius. In that case, there's no incentive. And the Gemara there said the morius there is fine because there's no incentive to put wine in there. So what you see from that is that Rashi's reasoning is true. When it's uneconomic to cheat, people won't cheat there. They won't put the wine in there. Nobody's going to put wine that you can get four times the price for inside of morius where you're going to get a quarter of the price. It just doesn't make sense. And so you see the economic incentives are what driving that which is here. Now over here you can see a little aleph in the bach. It's clear from the way Rashi sets this up that Vogar Sinan, this statement over here is not in the Girsa, but much later on, after the statement of Shmuel, the Baalei Tosafot don't like that Rashi moved the Girsa around. They say, they explain why Rashi moved the Girsa, but they say that's not sufficient reason to move the Girsa. Just because you think it should be moved doesn't mean it should be moved. We'll read it over here and I'll explain to you why that is. Pat l'may nechushla. When it comes to pat, what is the issue that you're worried about? If you're worried about swapping it out, if he's going to take older bread that is already aged a little bit and fresh bread, but you're going to know that right away. If you had fresh bread and some guy switches it out with some stale bread or some older bread, you're going to know that right away. If he's going to swap wheat bread for barley bread, again, you're looking for an economic incentive to do this. Fresh bread is worth more than stale bread or older bread. Chite, wheat bread is worth more than barley bread. Namami yidiyadiyah. That's obvious. You can tell the difference between wheat bread and barley bread. E ki hadadadi, if they're exactly the same, kevin deika chutam echad, lo toroch umizayif. Since there's a single seal on it, it's not worth the effort to do it. So again, if the breads are exactly identical, why is he going to swap out the bread and have to deal with the chutam when he has the same thing himself? So there's no reason, there's no incentive to swap it out. So that it would explain why you need only a chutam achad by bread, because there's no reason that would indicate or incentivize the individual to do something different. Now the Baalei Tosafot would say, the reason Rashi didn't like this girsa being here is because Rav had four items that were mentioned there, the champag. He didn't just mention pot. And why is the Gemara only asking about pot and not the other items? It doesn't make sense that he focused on pot. You could ask the same question about all the items there, chiltit, morios, pot, and gvina. Why do they only need a chotam achad? And you could explain all of them. So why is the Gemara only explain about pot? And that's what caused Rashi to move the girsa to further on the Gemara, where it makes sense that they'd be only asking about pot, not asking about pot in the context of four other items. That's the reason Rashi did it, but the Baalei Tosafot say still, even with that, it's still not worth moving the girsa. V'rav, maishna gvina, delo tarachu mizayif, chalav nami, lav tarachu mizayif. Rav makes a distinction between chalav and gvina. Why should there be a distinction? Gvina is a derivative of chalav, it's just curdled milk. So if you are going to worry about milk having a double seal on it, then why should you have to worry about gvina having a double seal on it? Number vana, ofik chalav, take chalav out of the list, vayo chatikat dag shein basiman, and replace it with a piece of fish that has no simanim on it. Gemara says, hainu basar, that's the same thing as flesh or meat. Trei gabnei basar, different type of meat. There's fish meat and there's meat. So those are different items, and therefore they're going to be separated in the enumeration on the list that he has there. Shmuel Omer, Shmuel says, Bayit asur b'chotam achad. These three items does not suffice with a single seal. Machag mutar b'chotam achad. And machag is fine with a single seal. Now, what he did was simply drop one item in each list. The way that Rav had it was chavit. So he drops chalav out of the list, and he puts in the bait part of it. And then in the machag, he drops the pot out of the list, and that is the champag. He took out the pay, he took out the pot. Basar, yayin, and tchelet, which are the beet parts, those, asurim, b'chotam achad, not sufficient with a single seal. Morius, chiltit, and gvina, mutarim, b'chotam achad, they are sufficient with a single seal. Lishmuel, chatika dak, she'in basiman, hainu basar, that is the same as basar, and that's why he left it out. Trei gavne basar, lo amrinan, two types of basar we don't need to put in. And that's why he dropped chet of chalav, like we said in Rav's, we took out chalav and put in chatikat dag, because now we're going to join chalav with vina and say that they only need a single seal. They don't need a double seal. If that's the case, why doesn't he replace the chet of chalav with the fish? The answer is because fish is a subset of basar, and therefore you don't need a separate item for it. So Rashi says over here, Vishmol lo poliga Rav. Shmuel doesn't argue on Rav. He just says that it's not necessary to put them in. You don't have to put in dog, because dog is a subset of basar. So if you already mentioned basar, then you don't need it. What about pot? This is where Rashi thinks the girsa comes in. Rashi thinks the girsa of pot, l'may nechushla. What do you have to worry about by pot? That Gemara that we read before, he says it's an explanation for why Shmuel dropped pot out of the list. Because there's nothing to worry about by pot. Lechlufe, there's nothing. New bread and old bread, nobody's going to swap. Barley and wheat bread, nobody's going to swap. And therefore, there's no reason for him to bother with it. There's no chashash that they're going to do something wrong with regards to pot. And therefore, if you think that pot akum is okay, then you don't have to worry about anything with regards to pot. Tarabanan, ein lochim yamach machag b'Suria. You're not allowed to buy these six items in Suria unless you know the person is ne'eman. No, that means that he has hashkacha and he does certain things. Because in Suria, it seems to be that there were these type of people that were similar to the Kutim, and similar to the Shomronim, which was that they abided by halacha, but they did not subscribe to the Chachamim's explanation of Lifnei Iver lo titein mikshol, which is that they didn't believe that Lifnei Iver lo titein mikshol means you're not allowed to cause someone else to do an Aveira. That's the way Chazal and the Torah Shebaal Peh interpret it. The simple meaning is you can't cause somebody to trip up, you can't cause somebody to have something bad happen to them. So Chazal said that includes in the areas of halacha. What happened is that these people in Suria had a similar attitude, which is that, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to do any Surim. Someone else? Not my problem. And they would sell things to other people that were problematic. And so therefore, they don't have ne'manut with these items. Lo yayin, you can't buy wine. Lo morius, velo chalav, velo melach, sal kondrit, velo chiltit, velo gvina. Any one of these six items cannot be purchased from them, ela mina mumche. Unless the person is a expert, quote unquote, means that he has hashkacha, and he's known to have a professional experience and to bring these things only with hashkacha, only do the right thing with regards to these items. B'kulam, im nitareach etzel balabait mutar. If you are being hosted by the individual, then you can eat these items if the balabait is eating them. Because again, they are not chashud to take iser themselves, they're just chashud to give it to someone else. So he's eating from it, you know that it's fine. If that's the case, then it's mutar to eat along with him, because you know there's no problem of Isur. Now here, the Baal Yitosef will point out that even though Chalav and Gvina, we joined together in the previous Gemara, nevertheless, the reasons behind Chalav and Gvina are different. The reason, according to the Baal Yitosef, that Chalav is Asur is because of Mitarve. They mix in Chalav Tameh with the Chalav Tor. The problem by Gvina, the way that the Baal Yitosef Paskin is Giloy. It's a problem of the snake venom being deposited over there, not a problem of mixture of Tameh. Other Rishonim disagree with the Baal Tosafot, but that was the Baal Tosafot's conclusion, and that's why the Rabbeinu Tam said, I don't know why we can't buy non-Jewish cheeses, because there's nothing to be chosesh for based on where we live and the situation that we are in. But that the Baal Tosafot point out here, that's why in the list here, both Chalav and Gvina are mentioned, because they're for different reasons, and given that different reason, each one of them is a preclusion to buy from these individuals, so they're not careful about it. Messiah later of Yeshua ben Levi, Tam Yeshua ben Levi, Shagalo balabait the beito mutar. The balabait sends it to his house, it is mutar. My time, huh? Balabait lo shovek hetera v'akal isura. The balabait is going to eat heter, they're not going to eat something that is asur. B'chim shagale, when a balabait sends something, b'maid ochil mishagdele. He sends that which he's eating. When you go to the store and you're buying things, when people make things on a commercial basis, they do different things on the commercial level than they do in their own private house. So there you have to worry about it. The other hand, if a person is sending you over a kugel, it's usually because they cooked a kugel for themselves and a kugel for you, and they're sending you over the kugel. That's fine, because there you assume that whatever they are making for themselves, they would send to you. They're not going to make something separate and bring isur for you in particular. And for that reason, even if he sends it to you as a gift, you can trust it, because, again, this principle that in their own house they wouldn't eat isur, so too they weren't going to send you that as isur. If they're doing it commercially, then you have to worry about it. That's a distinction that's brought up in Suria. And just interesting about the culture or social context of Suria as to the status there. Suria was always an area that had this quasi-halachic status. And it's interesting that the people who lived there also had a quasi-halachic status and that they were also problematic. Melach sal kondrit. My melach sal kondrit. So melach sal kondrit was also mentioned in our Mishnah as something that you're not allowed to eat but does not have a Isur Hana'a. And in addition, we just mentioned it as one of the things that you're not allowed to buy in Surya. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmo, Melach, Shekol Sal Kondrei Romi, Ukhli Mota, is the salt that's been eaten by all the bakers in Rome. Mishom Shema'arvim Ba Kivei Dagim, Tmeim. They mix into it non-kosher fish, and that's going to come up in the Braita that we're about to bring here. Tanu Rabbanan, Melach Sal Kondrit, Shechora Asura. If it's dark or it's blackened, then it's problematic. Livana, if it's white, muteret. It's no problem. Dibre Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Yudomer Livana Asura. The white one is Asur. Shechora muteret. If it's black, then it's fine. Yudom ben Gamliel Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Meir. Zo v'zo Asura. They are both problematic. Meaning that whether it's white or black, you have a problem. Amar Rabbi Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The Dibre Omer Livana Asura. The one who says that the white melach is problematic, that's because there's white, non-kosher fish that's mixed into it. The Divi Omer Shechora Asura, the one who says that the black and one is Asur, is Kivei Dagim Shechorim Tmeim Uravim Ba. There are pieces of a dark fish that are mixed up inside of it. The Divi Omer Zobazo Asura, the one who says that they're both Asura, Zevizim Uravim Ba, they mix in both white and dark non-kosher fish into the salt. Amar Rabbi Yubau, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, V'lakein ha'echad haya b'shkunatenu. We had this elderly gentleman, non-Jewish gentleman that was in our neighborhood, she'a machlik panea b'shuman chazir, that he used to baste the salt with lard, with the fat of the pig. And that's what the problem is. Not that there's non-kosher fish, but rather they're adding lard or flavor to the salt. In any case, the problem here is that they're flavoring the salt, and they're flavoring the salt with non-kosher items. And that's why you're not allowed to use this type of salt. Harielu asurim. Our Mishnah says that all of these items are asur b'achila, not b'hana'a. So what is that coming to preclude? Le'me'utei mai, l'chizkiya, who we saw at the beginning of today's daf, le'me'utei bi'adua. In a case where you know for sure that there is yayin in there, then that would be problematic. In the case where you didn't know there was yayin, it was only asur b'achila. But where you did know there was yayin in there, in the kvashim, that would be problematic. Rabbi Yochanan, the Mute Morius, Vinat Benon Yonki, it comes to exclude the case of Morius, where there's also an Isra'ana, or the cheeses of Benon Yonki, stomach Rabbi Meir. And that is according to Rabbi Meir, who says in the previous Mishnah on Chavtet, that those items are Asurim Behana'a. That's what it comes to exclude, or that's what it is telling you, the differentiating that last statement between what's in this Mishnah and what you would otherwise have the Aloha be in other instances. Now we come to the third Mishnah. The first Mishnah told us things that are Asurim Behana'a. Second Mishnah told us things that are asurim b'achila and shtia. And the third Mishnah says, elu mutarim b'achila. These are items that are mutar to eat. Chalav shechalvo uvei kochavim. Milk that was milked by a non-Jew. B'Yisrael roeyu. And a Jew is watching him. That's how we get chalav Yisrael. Which says that the Jew is watching the non-Jew do the milking. And that's good enough to make it into chalav Yisrael. Badvash, honey. And we'll see why again in the Gemara. V'adav davniyot. These are clusters of grapes. Afapishim natfim. Even if they're dripping liquid or juices that are coming out of them, ein bayam mishum hekshir mashke. They are not considered to be a liquid that is makshir the item to be mekabel tuma. Rukavashim, shein darkam latet l'tochan yayin v'chometz. Pickled items where they normally don't add wine or vinegar to the pickling brine. Vitarit shein etrufa. And this pickled herring, that is not mixed up, that's not chopped up. So it's not like a fish hash where you can't identify the fish that's there. It's something that has whole pieces of fish in there where you could identify the fish. Bitzir, sheish badaga, and also fish brine that has, here the Mishnah doesn't finish the sentence, but it's sir sheish badagach kilbit. It has the kilbit in it, and therefore it is mutar, as opposed to the other Mishnah which didn't have the kilbit in it. Va'ale shel chiltit, and the leaf of the chiltit. The chiltit was the astufida that we saw before, which is the davar charif. That's the root or the vegetable that has the davar charif. The leaves aren't problematic, even if they're charif, because you don't cut them with a knife. So there's no problem of the davar charif or the absorption there. Zeite gruskaot hamigugalim, and the olives that are stuck together. They used to put the olives together in a basket, and then in that basket they used to then slowly leach out the oil in them, and also heat up and warm up and cause themselves to go a little rotten, but that was the pre-pressing placement of the oil. Those are fine. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hashlachin Asurim, The Gemara will explain what he means, but the shlachim are problematic with regards to the olives. Hachagavim abayim min aslula asurim. The grasshoppers or locusts that are purchased from the store or from the buckets in the store, they are problematic. Min haheptek mutarim. Those are fine, and as you can see in the Oroch, the explanation is those that come out of the storage area are fine. V'chein l'truma, and similarly with truma, which the Gemara will discuss. But the Gemara will note for us that when they sell them out of the buckets out in the storefronts, they sprinkle wine on them, either to give them a nice flavor or to make them look more attractive. But that gives them limited shelf life because the wine at some point will go rancid and then it will ruin the chagavim. So if they're coming out of the storehouse and they've been put there for long duration, nobody's going to put wine on them because then everything will rot and go bad. So if they're stored and they bring them out to you from the store, then you don't have to worry about that. On the other hand, if they are selling them in the storefront, there you have to worry about the sprinkling of the wine on them. And we actually have seen this a number of times before. And the Balei Tosafot also commented about that, that you have to be there. If a Jew's there, when the guy pulls it out of the storage area, you don't have to worry about it because nobody stores these things with wine because of the limited shelf life it'll have if you put wine in it. Tanina Adadanu Rabbanan. We have now a Mishnah that supports that which we've seen from the Tosefta, that Yoshev Yisrael beside the Dro Shel Ovid Kochavim. A Jew can be sitting next to the flock of the Ovid Kochavim, and then the Ovid Kochavim can milk, or maybe lo, and then bring him the milk that he just milked. You don't have to worry about tarovet. You don't have to worry about him mixing up items. Hey, Kidami, what's the situation? There are no non-kosher animals there. Then pshita, what do you even need a mashkiach for? There's nothing there that can be mixed in. If there are non-kosher animals there, then why is he believed? It is a case where it's a davar tameh. When the Jew stands up, he's able to see the non-Jew milking. When he's sitting down, he can't keep his eye on him. I would have thought given the yotiv lo chazile, when he's sitting down, he can't see him. While the Jew is sitting, the non-Jew will mix up the milks because the Jew's not watching at that point. Since when he stands up, he would be visible. The non-Jew is fearful, and therefore he will not mix it up. And this is an important principle in kashrut in general, which is that a person can be trusted in situations where they're fearful of getting caught. And if they're going to fear about getting caught, whether that's because they're a professional, or whether that's because the government inspector is coming, or whether that's because the mashkiah is going to show up, that mirta, that fear, makes it that we assume they're going to do the right thing in these situations. So here, even though the Jew can't have a direct eye on him because he's sitting down, he's not watching him, but he could pop up at any second. The Jew could pop up and see him. That way, the goy is always afraid. Because if he goes to mix it, the Jew could pop up at that moment and catch him in the act, and he'll lose everything. So it's not worth it to him because he's fearful of being caught. And that's enough to give you the hashkocha that you are looking for. Badvash. Dvash, honey, also is mutar. Because dvash, the maynechushla. Dvash, there's nothing to be choshesh for. There's no problem with honey. Even because they mix other things in it, misra sari, it would become rancid or putrid if you add in other things. Honey's value is in the fact that it has long shelf life. That has to do with the fact that no bacteria can survive inside the honey because it's too high a sugar content for the bacteria. But if you start entering other items in there, they will provide a platform for the bacteria to come and cause the rotting over there. If you are worried about bishul akum, nechal kamoshu chai. It's already, it can be eaten in its raw state, so then if he cooks it, it doesn't become bishul akum. That's what we saw yesterday. You're worried about the fact that they're going to heat it up or warm it up in one of their pots, and then the isur, the flavor of the isur would leach into the honey. Over there, again, the assumption being that the pots are older than one day, and therefore the flavor being leached in there is a negative flavor, and that's mutar, because it's notein tam lifgam. Given that, there's no reason not to buy honey from the non-Jews. Vadav dav nirot, and the clusters of grapes. Alfo pishim inatfot, ein beim shum echshem akshkeh. Even though they have liquid dripping out of them, that doesn't make them mukshar the kabel tuma. Virimini, is that really true? Abutzer legat, someone is picking grapes into the basket to bring them to the press. Shamay omer hukshar, the liquids that come out of those grapes at that time are makshar the grapes in the basket. Hillel omer lo hukshar,
Hillel says that it's not Muksha de Kabul Tuma. And Hillel agreed to Shammai, but assuming that you want the liquid in that case, because you're going to press them for wine, that liquid is Nechalei. If it's Nechalei, it's Muksha de Kabul Tuma. Why don't we say the same thing over here? Hotam Kabayle Namashke. Over there, he's pressing the grapes for liquid. So if they leach liquid, that's exactly the direction he wants to go, and therefore it's Nechalei. Over here, he's selling them to eat the grapes, not for the pressing of the grapes, for the wine inside of them. Given that, he's not interested in the liquid that leaches out, or he's indifferent to the liquid leaching out, and therefore it's not mukshar, the kabel, tuma. B'tarit she'ena trufa, this tarit that is not mixed up, where you can't tell what the fish is, tanur banan. Is it tarit she'ena trufa? What does it mean that it's not mixed up, where you can identify the fish that are in there? Kol shirosh v'shidra nikar. As long as you can see the face, the head of the fish, and the spine of the fish, then it's good. Because, as Rashi notes over here, the spine and the face allow you to identify all fish. That is, Rashi brings the principle here. Shetmeim rasheim chadim. When it comes to non-kosher fish, they have very pointy faces. And when it comes to kosher fish, they have rounder faces. And ein lo chut hashidra. And they also do not have a spine, which... Again, this statement is somewhat questionable because we find non-kosher fish that do have spines. Some of them don't, but some of them do. All kosher fish do have spines, because that doesn't mean that the tameim don't have it. But nevertheless, if you have these two items, you'll be able to identify the fish, according to Rashi. Bezut sir sheish padaga. What is a sir that has a fish floating around in it? Kol shekubit achat o shtei kubiot shotutot bo. It's a case where this one kubit or two kubit are found inside of the fish brine. The way Rashi describes it over here is, G'deila me'eleha b'tzir dagim torim. It grows of its own inside of the fish brine. What Rashi seems to be describing over here is spontaneous generation, which is, this is a sheretz, or a fish, and the fish happens to be non-kosher, as Rashi noted on the Mishnah, that grows inside of kosher fish brine. It only happens in kosher fish brine, not in non-kosher fish brine. And number two is, it's spontaneously generated. Given that it's spontaneously generated, it's only going to be found inside of kosher fish brine. It won't happen inside of non-kosher fish brine. When I said, Hashta kubita chata mart, shari, when there's one fish floating around in there, it's kasher. Shtei kubiot mi bayi? You need to have two? If you know one it's kasher, then why do you need two? No kasha. Kambit tuchot, kambit stumot. Depends if the fish brine is open or it's closed. The way Rashi explains that is, kubiot tuchot, Lo sagi b'chado. There's not enough of one. Dikla meimer mi alma nafole. It fell in from something else. It came from outside the barrel and fell in. When you have two of them in there, that's already an indication that this is an environment that's conducive to the kilbit. If you have one in there, it might have been it was pouring the brine out of something else, and it fell into this one, and that's how it got there. The stumot, you only need one, because the stumot, it couldn't come from outside. The only way it could have been there is if it's spontaneously generated inside, and that's why it's kasher. That's a view of Rashi. Consider in the Balei Tosafot. Rabbeinu Ephraim, Hikshar Misamuch, he asks a question about this. Alma p'tuchot alin in l'kula. Open fish brine, you're more makil than you are with closed fish brine. Based on that, the Kachayam Ephraim, Rabbeinu Ephraim, lehefet. Just the opposite of Rashi. Bipituchot sagya bechado. When they're open, it's enough with one cubit. The ikalameima, achrite alzla li alma. The other one that was there jumped out, it was taken away, it was poured out when he was put in the fish brine to someone's utensil. It says, about the stumot, tzerech shtayim. But by the stumot, you have to have two of them, because when you open it up, there should be two of them in there. All right, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Mem Amud Aleph.